राम की जय, मायापुर धाम की जय, जगन्नाथ स्वामी की जय, गंगा मई की जय, जमुना मई की जय, तुलसी देवी की जय, भक्ति देवी की जय, श्री बलराम की जय, श्री बलराम की जय, श्री बलराम की जय, सहित भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंदी हरि हरि। So this is a good morning, New Dwarka. Today is the appearance day of Lord Balaram, 2008. And if we just think a little bit, we can immediately appreciate some of the unlimited glories of Lord Balaram. So I'll share some of the thoughts that I've had this morning about Lord Balaram. First, his name. Bala, of course, is strength, force, and also in Sanskrit it means army, just like we say in English, armed forces. So Bala, power, strength, force, and Rama, one who takes pleasure or gives pleasure, actually. There's a verse which Prabhupada quotes, Sanskrit verse, in his purports, Ramante yogino anante, that the yogis, the spiritualists, the transcendentalists, ramante, they take pleasure anante, in the infinite, because obviously it's like, do the math, if you take pleasure in the finite, you're going to ultimately hit a wall. And that's basically what material life is, bouncing off walls and trying a new direction, then you discover a new exciting wall somewhere else. So the transcendentalists, the spiritualists, take pleasure in the infinite because that way it never ends and it can grow forever. So not only is Krishna Nava Yovana, which means new youth, and Prabhupada said always new, but it's just the nature of life itself that there's this been there, done that thing. So if the tendency is that after a while you think, I've been there, I've done that, what about a world that's eternal? And of course, the eternal world is ever fresh, ever expanding. So, I mean, the pleasure of falling in love, there's a sense in which every day in the spiritual world, Radhan Krishna, fall in love. Because that excitement, that joy of discovering something new, it's there because spiritual life is always new. So the spiritualists take pleasure in the infinite. And ramante yogino anante satyanande, in the bliss of truth. Now if I, let's say, out of vanity, if I take pleasure because I think that someone is admiring me, I'm taking, and let's say that admiration is, I'm taking pleasure in the illusion, especially if it's based on the body. It's based on the body. So if you think about it, material pleasure is criticized not because, as someone once said, a definition of a priest is someone who has this deep fear that someone, somewhere, may be having a good time. So, it's not that Krishna forbids these things or strongly urges us not to do certain things just because, you know, it's nice, but you can't do it. But because it's actually false, it's an illusion, it's taking pleasure in the illusion. So the spiritualists take pleasure in the truth. And the truth is that we're eternally part and parcel of Krishna, who expands as Balaram, the first expansion of Krishna as Balaram. So the spiritualists take pleasure in the infinite, in the bliss of truth, and iti rama padena so parang brahma vidyate. Thus the absolute truth is known as Rama. And of course the first Rama is Balaram. So in Sanskrit, the word Rama, I won't go into all the grammatical details, which I'm sure will frustrate most of you, but actually the word Rama means also to be the source of pleasure. Grammatically, it means the source of pleasure. So Balaram not only takes pleasure in his own strength, but he's a source of our pleasure in strength. So the first thing I want to talk about, that As we know, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that's the nature of God, that God has no material desires. God seeks nothing. God is complete in every way. Krishna says that there's nothing non-avaptam, avaptavyam. There's nothing I lack. There's nothing I seek. Still I'm engaged in working or doing things in this world. So one of Krishna's opulences, one of the opulences of the Supreme Lord is vairagya, infinite detachment. So how does someone, a supreme being with infinite detachment, take pleasure in that person's own strength? So of course, this kind of language that Balaram takes pleasure in his own strength doesn't mean that he's like some, you know, some guy showing off at the beach to the girls or something. Obviously, that's not what it's about. It's not someone who in some material way is taking pleasure in their own power. Krishna, ultimately, Balaram. So perhaps I want to sort of set that out as a theme for this talk, and then I want to mention something else about Balaram and try to tie these things together. And as we know, as we should know, we are monotheists. That means we believe in one God. We're not polytheists. We don't believe there are many gods. There's one supreme God, as stated in the Brahma Sanghita, Advaitam, Achyutam, Anadim, Anantarupam, that Govinda, Krishna, is Advaita. He's one. He's not dual. There aren't two gods, and certainly there aren't three or ten. There's one God. The Vedas always state this. There's one supreme absolute truth. And yet Krishna is Anantarupam. He has infinite forms. So Krishna, the first form, Krishna expands into Balaram. And Krishna, as Balaram, is always sort of in character. It's like... confirmed. It's like in a movie, I mean, or in a book, this is one of the criteria of good narration, whether it's a book or a movie or a theater or whatever, is that the character has to always be in character. So sometimes, for example, be criticized, like say, someone was acting, an actor was in a movie, and one of the criticisms of the movie was that at a certain point in the movie, the actor was speaking a certain way, and then later in the movie kind of spoke somewhat out of character. So that consistency, so Krishna, what I mean to say is, as Balaram, he's always in character. When Krishna expands himself, it's still God, it's still the same God, it's the same Supreme Lord, acting as Balaram, Krishna really becomes Balaram and does it so perfectly that you can almost drift into an idea that there are different people. And of course, in the pastimes, in Krishna Leela, this is one of the just sort of inconceivable, miraculous, glorious features of Krishna's infinite Leela, is that in his pastimes, when you're in Krishna's pastimes, and talking to Balaram and talking to Krishna, it's like, okay, this is Krishna, that's Balaram. And yet it's actually the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. For example, there's a pastime when the gopis were looking for Krishna. They came across Narayan. Now, for everyone else except the gopis, this would be like the most amazing thing that could happen in millions of lifetimes, to see God. In other religions, they speak about, like, can anyone ever see God? And no one has ever seen God. It's such a big thing. They can't imagine. I can't even wrap my head around that, you know, what it would be like to see God. So, and even the yogis meditate for who knows how many lifetimes, trying to get a little glimpse in their heart. But here the gopis, when they're actually seeing God Narayan, they just ask directions. I'm like, I'd love to stay here and worship you, but I just haven't got time. Because I'm looking for Krishna. So, anyway, there was another, then it said in this pastime that when Radharani came, Krishna actually couldn't keep his other two arms out, because it's almost like, I mean, imagine if, let's say you're in disguise, like you've got some makeup on or a mask or something, you're pretending you're someone else. And then someone who knows you very well comes up and you just like looks right in your eye. And at a certain point, you just sort of crack up. You can't maintain it. So Radha and I just looked at Narayan, and Krishna couldn't maintain it. So he just, okay, it's me. But the idea here, the point I want to make is that Narayan was Krishna. It's not like there were two different people. There is only one God. So Balaram is, in every sense, the Supreme Lord. It's Krishna performing pastimes as Balaram. So when we have that very clear, that there's one Supreme Personality of Godhead who manifests in different forms, the first expansion being Balaram, then when we study Krishna Leela and Balaram Leela, when we study how Krishna comes down to this world, we can start to really enter into Krishna's thinking, because Krishna really does choreograph his pastimes. It's not that he just comes down to earth and, yeah, let's just, you know, just let it happen, see what happens this time, or let it fly, go with the flow. I mean, obviously there's a spontaneity with Krishna Leela, but he does design his pastimes. In fact, the most famous academic translation of Mahabharata was done by a professor who was actually nice to the devotees at the University of Chicago about 20 years ago, I suppose, he published this. And in his introduction, his academic introduction to the Mahabharata, he keeps saying over and over again that someone planned this stuff. I mean, he kept saying that, okay, according to the Hindu tradition, as he understood it, this is itihasa, this is history. This is a history of what actually happened. But, he said, when you read it, you can't get around the strong impression that someone actually choreographed this. And he keeps saying this over and over again. And I was thinking, duh, Krishna choreographed it. So when you study Krishna Leela, you can actually start, and we even find that, say in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, it's a common thing where something will be happening, and Krishna had said, Krishna started to think that I must kill this demon. So Krishna actually thinks. You know, the good news is God is a thinking guy. And so Krishna, you can actually start to enter into Krishna's sublime thinking, because it's like there's a very well-known psychology of good cop, bad cop, which is if you're dealing with, let's say, a suspect or someone who's been accused of something, and you want to get the person to open up, to sort of open up and cooperate, then two police will go in, the question, you know, to interrogate the person, and one of them is really nice and friendly, like, I'm totally on your side. I'm totally on your side. And the other one's like real heavy and the authority. It's like this combination of a heavy, you know, they say good cop, bad cop. So it's a very standard technique used also outside law enforcement circles for various purposes. It's even been used, actually, in the administration of the Hare Krishna movement. So anyway, using this framework, I find it fascinating that when Krishna comes to this world, he also comes as Balaram, and of course, parallel to this, Gaur Nitai. I find it fascinating because if you study Balaram's pastimes, and of course Nityananda's pastimes, since he's Balaram, Krishna, because he's God, because he's the father, it's almost like a father-uncle thing, where the father has to raise the kid. If the child is really getting out of control, the father has to step in and just, you know, lower the boom. That's life. No boundaries, you just produce a little monster. So Krishna has to set boundaries. And he says that in Bhagavad Gita, that dharma sangstapanartaya, I've got to set the boundaries. That's what dharma, in fact, there's a common, and dharma is commonly referred to as a boundary. It's a boundary. In fact, there's a term maryada. There's the term maryada vyatikrama, which Prabhupada mentions in his purport in a third canto verse, where Maitreya, the venerable sage, no, Vidura, the great Vidura, approached Uddhava and said, you know, please preach to me, basically. And Uddhava said, well, I'd be happy to talk to you about Krishna, but Maitreya's here, and he's senior. It's like, you know, he joined the Hare Krishna movement before I did. Obviously, Uddhava is an eternal devotee, but in terms of etiquette, because he was an elderly person, elderly sage, And so at that, in that verse, and then in Prabhupada's purport, the discussion is about maryada, the boundaries, and vyatikrama literally means to step over. To step over. Ati means over, and krama means to step. So when you step over the boundary, maryada, vyatikrama. So dharma, what is the right thing to do? It's like a boundary, and a father has to set, and the mother, the parents have to set the boundaries for the child. You know that. All the child psychology says that the worst parents, no love, no boundaries. Third best, boundaries and no love. Second best, love and no boundaries. And the best parents are boundaries and love. So children actually need boundaries, and when Krishna comes, he actually does that. But then you've got sort of like this uncle figure, this avuncular figure. Avuncular means like an uncle. El tiocito. You know, you have Balaram comes, and he's just like this great guy. Like he's like Mr. Whatever. And Balaram is actually known for these pastimes of being very free. He's just like this free spirit. I mean Nityananda would sort of walk around. Sometimes he'd dress, sometimes he wouldn't dress. And Balaram, you know, he takes this this beverage, and he gets a little sort of transcendentally tipsy sometimes. So Balaram is just this incredible free spirit. God, I mean, he's God. And it's amazing because between Krishna and Balaram, you have these two different pictures or two different aspects of God. They're both God. It's both the same Krishna. And so in that sense, because Krishna as Krishna, even Krishna sometimes establishes the point that, yeah, I have to set the boundaries. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I follow them myself. But he also has to teach us that because if Krishna only followed the rules, we might start to think he was one of us. So he does the Rasa Leela. So we can understand, okay, in general, Krishna follows the rules because he has to teach us, but he is God. He's really free. And everything Krishna does brings about the greatest good for everybody. He doesn't have to follow all the detailed rules to bring about the good for everyone. So Balaram, as Balaram is Nityananda, he shows us that other aspect of God, that he really is absolutely free, and that he's not just a disciplinarian, he's not just setting down dharma, but he actually is just this wonderful, free, perfect being. So between Krishna and Balaram, it almost like I have always thought that it, in a way, what Krishna is doing is he's facilitating us, because we are conditioned souls. To be conditioned means to be conditioned by material desires. It's like, what else is going to condition you? So we're conditioned by material attachments and desires, and that means envy. Because if I'm attached to something, I become envious if someone's going to take it away. The more I'm attached to my reputation, my pride and vanity, the more disturbed or angry I get if someone insults me or offends me. These things are like direct proportions. They're direct ratios. So the more I'm attached, let's say the more a man is attached to a woman, like, this is my woman. You know, the more a man is attached like that, the more angry and disturbed he'll get if it becomes a triangle. Or if someone, you know, wants to steal my woman. So, and the less attached you are, tell me if you heard this one night. This guy's speeding in his car, and so, you know, cop gets behind him, flashes the lights. And so he thinks, I'm going to outrun this cop. And, like, makes a dumb move. So he's racing his car, and the cop stays with him. Finally, the cop corners him, makes him stop. So the cop says, you better have a really good explanation for what you did. And he said, well, yeah. He said, last week a cop ran off with my wife. And so the cop said, well, yeah, I'm sorry to hear about that, but, you know, it doesn't justify your speeding. So the guy said, well, yeah. I was afraid you were going to try and give her back. So, no offense to the ladies. I mean, you could tell the same joke with a woman driver. And you could easily tell the joke with a woman driver. So the point here is that Well, anyway, I don't want to give a class, an anti-family class. But the point is that the more detached we are, the less disturbed we are. So because we are conditioned souls, to some extent, we are envious of Krishna. If to no extent, if we had zero envy in us, we would be seeing Krishna everywhere. So if you're not seeing Krishna everywhere, and you're a sane person, if you're not seeing Krishna everywhere, it's because we still are working on that impurity. You know, it's a gradual process. We're still going through our wash cycle. But precisely because we are, to some extent, envious of Krishna, obviously we're not totally envious of Krishna, we're not foaming at the mouth envious of Krishna, because we're in the Hare Krishna movement. So, I mean, basically, everyone who is trying to approach Krishna is ultimately a very sincere, even a great soul. But still, we're working on that lingering impurity. And I think it's really Krishna's arrangement. He comes down in different forms, like Krishna and Balaram, to kind of deflect some of our envy. So if it was only like Krishna in that one form, but there's Balaram, it's like you got your father and you love your father, but everyone sometimes, maybe you have some issue with your father, so you can go talk to your uncle or something. So I feel that Krishna comes in these different forms to give us choice and just to sort of lighten up a bit. Like there's Krishna, there's Balaram. He appears in different incarnations. It's actually his mercy to just allow us, in our present state, a little sense of space and freedom, and you can, you know, choose this or do that. And yet it's all about Krishna. It's all about God. It's actually Krishna's kindness. And, of course, there's the other aspect that Krishna does have infinite creative potency. Krishna is just, he is the supreme artist. I mean, if you consider the universe, you could definitely make a very strong argument. In fact, someone should write a book about this. The universe as art. Because if you look at any aspect of the universe close enough, like a snowflake, a water crystal, anything, if you just look close enough, you'll find this fantastic art. One of the most amazing things I heard is someone recorded the sound of crickets chirping. I think they actually rubbed their legs or something. And so if you take the sound of crickets chirping and slow it way, way down, so that it's almost proportional to their lifespan. They live short lives. So if the speed of the music is kind of proportional to their lifespan, the way the speed of our music is to our lifespan, it actually is this like beautiful choral music. It sounds like Gregorian chants. So even if you take cricket chirping and just slow it down, it's like this exquisite, glorious church music. So everywhere you look, there's art. If you look at insects, if you ever look at these blown up pictures of insects, it's like wilder than the bar scene in Star Wars. You know, if you know that. Anyway, none of you know about that because that's a Carmi movie. So if you look at insects, you'd think the creator was on LSD or something, because it's just these amazing sci-fi bodies. So everywhere you look in the universe, there is art. There's art. If you look at everywhere. Biology, at the biological level, chemistry, everywhere there's art, there's design. And so Krishna is the supreme artist. He's an infinite artist. Fortunately, he's not a crazy artist, but he is a supreme artist. And therefore, I mean, you could think about it, think of correctional institutions. Correctional institutions, which is a nice way of saying prison. Prisons generally don't win architecture awards, isn't it? Either for the external, I mean, they probably have like a prison architecture competition somewhere in America. And there's even probably somewhere in America, there's probably a prison architecture museum, because every little city in America has a museum of something. There's a pickup truck tire museum somewhere in America. But anyway, so if you just wanted to correct someone, if you just wanted to correct someone, you could just do it functionally. You could just put someone in a situation where they gradually learn by, you know, like you do something, you get a pain. You do that, you get a pleasure, punishment and reward. But Krishna, even in creating this supreme correctional institution, which is the universe, Krishna has made it beautiful, fantastic, because that's his nature. Krishna is not only himself beautiful in the sense that he's incredibly good-looking. Krishna, everything Krishna touches becomes beautiful. It's like Prabhupada said, if you approach fire, you become fire. So whatever Krishna touches becomes beautiful. Whatever comes from Krishna is beautiful. We may corrupt ourselves or try to corrupt others, but Krishna's beauty, as Krishna expands, because Krishna's expansions are non-different from him, like the sunshine and the sun, everything Krishna touches, everything that emanates from Krishna is beautiful, because he's infinite beauty. So here we are in this universe, and because Krishna is infinite pleasure, because Krishna himself is constantly experiencing infinite pleasure, ever-increasing pleasure, everything that touches Krishna turns to pleasure, it turns to beauty, it turns to goodness, to moral goodness. So this analogy, when you touch fire, you become fire. So when everything that touches Krishna immediately starts to develop all of the opulences, all of the virtues, pleasure, beauty, goodness, everything, because Krishna is infinite opulence. And Balaram takes pleasure in his strength, because Balaram, as an absolutely pure, infinite soul, Balaram's pleasure is to give pleasure to others. And the word Rama means both. So Balaram's pleasure and his strength is the power of doing good for other souls. It's the power of bringing happiness and beauty into the lives of infinite beings. Because Balaram doesn't use his power for any other way. Because he's an infinitely good being. The spiritual platform is called Vasudeva Sattva. The Vasudeva goodness. I've made this point many times the last couple of years, that Krishna is not beyond morality. Krishna is infinite morality. Krishna is beyond moral rules. Krishna doesn't have to follow mundane moral rules in order to bring about the good. But if morality means bringing about the good, bringing about what is the well-being of all creatures, Krishna himself is the source of all morality. In fact, in the Bhagavad Gita, the very last verse of the Gita, the very last statement of the Gita, Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna, wherever there is Yogeshwara Krishna, Yatra Partha Dhanudhara, wherever there is bow-wielding Arjuna, Tatra, there, Sri, there will be beauty or opulence, Vijayo, victory, Bhuti, power. And the last statement of the Gita, Dhruvan Nitir, and certainly morality. The very last statement of the Gita. Dhruvaniti. There will be goodness, there will be virtue, there will be morality. Because Arjuna's first problem was, I think it's immoral to fight this war. And the Gita ends with the declaration that wherever there is Krishna, there will certainly be morality. So Krishna is infinite goodness. He's the source of all goodness. Just like it would be silly to say Krishna is beyond beauty. That's impersonalism. Krishna's not beyond beauty. He is infinite beauty. He's a source of all beauty. He's a source of all goodness. So Balaram comes to this world, and his power is only used as an expression of his infinite goodness. And goodness means to seek the true happiness of others. Because that's the nature of love. That's the nature of goodness. So that is the power of Balaram. And therefore, he's the original spiritual master. Because the whole point of a guru is to seek the goodness of others. Prabhupada, I'll end on this point. There have been, ISKCON has had the pleasure of all kinds of guru issues, some of them very profound and some of them amazingly eccentric. But if you read everything that Prabhupada has said about the guru, especially what I recommend, if you look at, Prabhupada quoted the verse that Lord Chaitanya spoke, Jare Dako Tarekaha Krishnupadesh. Whomever you meet, speak to them Krishna's message. And Jare Dako Tarekaha Krishnupadesh. I just said that. And then Amara Gyai. Amara Gyai, Guru Hai, Tare Desh. By my command, Amara Gyai, by my order, become a guru. And Prabhupada says, Prabhupada quotes this verse approximately 200 times in the Vedabase. About 200 times Prabhupada quotes this. And he quotes it everywhere, morning classes, evening classes, morning walks, room conversations, press conferences. Every possible forum where Prabhupada spoke, he quoted this verse. And Prabhupada was an extremely disciplined thinker. So if you read the hundreds of times Prabhupada quoted this, he has certain things he always wants to say about it. And one of the things Prabhupada always wants to say about this verse is, this applies to everyone. Prabhupada didn't take the position like, don't be presumptuous, don't be arrogant and think you can become a guru. Prabhupada's the opposite. Prabhupada says, if you don't become a guru, it's because you're selfish. Now, Prabhupada said, you know, Diksha Guru, Shiksha Guru, Vartma Pradarshika Guru, Pennsylvania Guru. I mean, it's like whatever. The kind of guru you become depends upon, to some extent, your social position. Like, for example, Prabhupada was lecturing to some businessmen in Nairobi. And he told them, because you still have all these family duties and you go to work every day, it may not be culturally appropriate to become a Diksha guru at this point. But just because, you know, you're still very much involved in all these other things. But he said, but you have to be gurus. Every one of us, because to be a guru doesn't mean, you know, free lunch. Or you have the, you know, the incredible honor of having people wave carcinogenic incense smoke in your face on your birthday. That's not the, or you get, you know, you, or you get 108 on your birthday or something. You get a check. The essence of being a guru is that you have to try to help other people. In that sense, Prabhupada expected that every one of us, every true follower of his, would become a guru. You know, the type of guru you become, whether it's neighborhood guru, county or, you know, city guru, statewide, regional, national, international, intergalactic. You know, the level you become a guru on, that's just a detail. That just depends on your circumstances. But Prabhupada said again and again, if you don't become a guru, it's because you're selfish. Because you don't want to really live your life for other people. Well, live your life, that's kind of scary, but dedicate your life to helping other people. So, in that sense, Balaram is the original guru. Because Balaram infinitely and perfectly, purely, acts for the ultimate good of everyone, for the ultimate happiness of everyone. And that's why he's the original guru. And that's his pleasure. His pleasure is in pure love for every living being, acting as their eternal well-wisher. And Prabhupada's representative as the outstanding spiritual master of this age. And more than that, actually. Founder of Acharya. So, any questions on these points? Balaram's apparent state. Yes. And the mic, talk show format.
So I guess Balaram killing the demons also represents this, as he killed Danikasura.
Oh yeah, Balaram's the original mixed martial artist.
So Danikasura represented when he just left the tall fruits just to rot.
The what?
The
fruits. Yeah, yeah.
So it's like devotees not distributing the knowledge.
Yes, exactly.
Just rotting and then like that.
So. Exactly. One of the things I find most entertaining in Balaram Leela is that Balaram, when Rukmi kind of had, you know, went crazy. And he was, because Krishna took Rukmini, I mean, he definitely needed a 12-step program, Rukmi, you know, anger management. But anyway, he just totally went crazy. And he was chasing Krishna and, you know, trying to fight him. And so Krishna thought, okay, take a little bit off the top. And then, of course, Rukmini begged him, you know, please don't kill my brother. I know he's incredibly obnoxious, but please don't kill him. So Krishna just gave him the original punk haircut. I don't know if he gave him any spikes, but he definitely gave him like this punk haircut, cut up his beard and everything. And then Balaram came along and said, come on, Krishna, he's family now. Because especially in pre-industrial extended family cultures, when you get married, it's really, like in England, they used to call marriages alliances. It was a marriage between families. Sure, the boy and the girl were kind of like leading the charge, but it was an alliance between families. It was not merely an individual thing. And so Balaram was telling him, come on, Krishna, he's family now. So Balaram's talking to him, gives him this whole little, you know, like little mini Bhagavatam class about why you shouldn't have done this to him. And then, when Rukmi insults Balaram, he just literally bashes his brains out. You know, he just takes his club. So he told Krishna, come on, he's family. But then when he insults Balaram, he just... So Balaram is definitely, the original supreme personality of mixed martial artists. So anyway, the octagon. So Balaram, he's just this amazing, unpredictable personality. And yet he is predictable in the sense that everything he does is for the infinite good of everyone. And yet how he does it, how he brings about the highest good for everyone is unpredictable. So Balaram is a wonderfully attractive, entertaining expansion of Krishna. So we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Lord Balaram ki jai.